It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 257. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I look back at the lopsided but somehow unnerving win against UMass. We then preview Utah State. Also on this week's show, LJ Rose is Matt's new favorite player, the Lone Peak 3 need a better nickname, and we name the most surprising team in the NFL. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Join the conversation with us over at Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, let's talk NFL for a second.
Are you going to do the lead-in?
Yeah, this is the lead-in.
That is the lead. You're not going to do that with the first pick in the NFL draft.
No. I'm not going to do that because we're not. Okay, I'll do it. Here we go. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
I was about to say Oakland Raiders, but I can't say Oakland Raiders. They're actually good.
Actually good might be a little bit of a stretch. Winning record in contention for a playoff spot.
They're a playoff team. They're a playoff team. They're losing to the Texans right now as we speak in the third quarter. We're also recording this during a BYU game, which if on occasion you ask me something and I just don't respond, it's probably because I'm watching the game on YouTube, which we'll get to in a second. Matt, as you look at the NFL, give me your surprise team. I'll give you a second to look while I tell people about my surprise team.
All right, what do you got?
All right. My surprise team is the Cleveland Browns. I didn't think they'd be quite this bad. I'm just kidding.
Then you weren't paying attention.
They're absolutely terrible. I think my surprise is actually the two surprise teams are playing tonight in Monday Night Football, the Houston Texans and the Oakland Raiders.
Yep.
Those are my two surprise teams. Other candidates might include the Dallas Cowboys.
What, are you just going to list all the possible surprise teams?
There's nothing left for me to talk about? My surprise team is the Texans. I thought their quarterback situation was going to be an absolute dumpster fire. But it hasn't been.
He's not a Pro Bowler.
He's not a Pro Bowler, and their defense is what makes them. But, they could win a playoff game or two. Possibly.
And they're playing without J.J. Watt, but they're still undefeated at home.
I mean, they're a very good defense. Very good defense.
Merciless.
So obviously. Do you have a surprise team?
Other than the Texans, my surprise team, I would have said the Cowboys. But you have to say after the Romo injury.
Actually,
9-1, even with Romo,
Would have been a surprise, right?
Yeah.
That totally would have been a surprise. Let's look at it this way, okay? By the way, the Texans have actually been outscored by their opponents, so that may not be sustainable, that 6-3, but we'll see. Matt, the Cowboys, on the other hand, have been dominant, right? 9-1, they've outscored their opponents 285 to 187. By almost 100 points in 10 games.
Yeah, right? That's not bad.
Yeah, you're outscoring your opponents by almost 10 a game. That's pretty good. So let me ask you this question, Matt. You remember the Ewing theory by Bill Simmons? You ever read the Ewing theory?
No.
So basically it was about sports stars who then leave or get injured and their team does better without them. Okay. This is like Tony Romo, kind of a cover boy type. You know, I've heard people call him elite. I never felt like he was elite NFL quarterback. But Dak Prescott comes in, unheralded rookie. I mean, that's a pretty cool story, unless you're Tony Romo, right? Then it's a terrible story.
It's a cool story for everybody but Tony Romo.
For everybody but Tony Romo and his mom. And even his mom might like it. I don't know. Maybe she likes underdog stories.
Yeah, who doesn't?
I mean, he was an underdog at one point. He
sure was. And he's about to become one again.
Well, no, he's not. Because don't you think his jersey says Jets on it next season? J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
I think he's going to Denver.
Oh, that'd be an interesting fit.
Yeah, I if I were him, it sounds like they're going to give him some say. I wouldn't go to the, I would just refuse.
You wouldn't go to the Jets. Yeah.
No.
But what about Denver? No. Simeon's played all right.
Yeah, but if you have a choice in Denver between Simeon or Romo,
I take Simeon.
Really?
Romo's just a back injury waiting to happen.
I don't know. Maybe he does go to the Jets.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Dolphins?
I think Tannehill has worn out his welcome, which is, I don't know what took them so long. But could be there. What about
the Browns? Go to the Browns.
If you think he's hesitant to go to the Jets look that make the Browns look like. The Browns make the Jets look like the Patriots.
I almost forgot that the Browns had a team this year.
Oh man, you know, Cleveland fans after winning that NBA title, it's just been punch in the mouth for them since then.
The Browns have been outscored 325-184.
Yeah. They've given up 325 points, which is by far, them and the Niners are the only teams over 300. And by the way, they're the only teams really close to 300 either. So you look at that and you're like, wow, the Cleveland Browns are bad. They're bad, Matt.
Yeah, I don't know what happens to Romo.
I don't know.
But that Dak Prescott's for real.
Oh, he's totally for real.
A machine.
Oh, well, and that's the other thing. Like, can you predict? I mean, can you predict NFL running backs with any clarity? I can't.
No. Nope.
I didn't think he was going to be the man. I loved him in college, but it's just like a lot of those guys that are great in college don't necessarily pan out. You know, for every Adrian Peterson, there's, you know, seven or eight guys that you forget their names.
Well, and to come out as a rookie and be this dominant?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's very, very special stuff right there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's
it's pretty awesome. And then you got like the, I was watching the Packers. They're handing the ball off to a wide receiver last night.
Yeah, it's gotten weird in Green Bay.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Matt, let's stick with the NFL and talk about Cougars in the NFL, okay?
There we go.
Detroit for the Lions, Ziggy had four tackles against the Jags. Still trying to find some sacks, Matt. Not his year with the injury and such. But speaking of sacks, let's talk about the Patriots, our favorite team. I am wearing a Patriots hoodie at the moment. Kyle Van Noy recorded his second career sack in his Pats debut.
Awesome.
Did you read the quote Belichick had about Kyle Van Noy?
I didn't actually see the quote.
So what Bill Belichick said, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, was he seemed to do all right. We'll check it on the film. He might have done some things well.
That's high praise from Belichick.
That's basically like he's a future Hall of Famer. No, seriously. He then also said they really like his versatility. I am predicting right now on this show, massive career resurrection, multiple Pro Bowls for KVN.
Wow. We are all about the overreaction these
past
couple weeks.
No, I'm not. This is not an overreaction. I thought when the trade happened, he is the perfect player for a Belichick and a Patricia defense. He's versatile. He can cover. He can rush the passer. He can play the run. This is the kind of linebacker they love. They love multidimensional players that they can move all over the place, like a Vrabel, like, who else am I missing off the top of my head? You know?
Collins.
You know, they
like had to get rid of.
Well, they got rid of these guys when they're, I mean, these guys don't go over and become like superstars someplace else, right?
Right.
Play was down. Van Noy's got a lot of mileage left in him, you know, because he's been injured the last few years and didn't put on the place. You disagree? You think I'm overreacting? Yeah, I'm overreacting.
I think it's a little early to talk about Pro Bowls.
Nope, not early. Pro Bowls.
I'm on the early side.
Multiple Pro Bowls.
You're jumping the gun just a little bit.
Nope, it's not. Dennis Pitta,
jumping the gun.
Dennis Pitta had three catches for 30 yards for the Ravens. He's been not big numbers lately for Dennis, but still playing, and we're glad to see him out there. Daniel Sorensen continues his solid season for the Kansas City Chiefs with another game with a couple of tackles. Matt, we're kind of doing this out of order a little bit today, but let's jump into thecougarfan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at cougarfan.com. Matt, the women's soccer run is done. They lost 1-0 in the Sweet 16 against top-seeded South Carolina. Unfortunate seeding for them. Maybe could have gone farther had they had a little bit better finish at the end of the year. But that being said, fantastic season for the BYU Cougars. And I think I read their fifth Sweet 16 appearance. So congratulations to them on a wonderful season.
That's awesome.
Volleyball swept series matches on the road, San Francisco and Santa Clara, 3-1 in both of those. Season finale is coming up this weekend at Loyola Marymount. BYU does own a 12-1 all-time record against, I don't even know their mascot. What's Loyola Marymount? The Gales?
The Lions?
The Lions. The Lions. I think you're right. And BYU at Loyola Marymount, watch out for this match. Loyola Marymount's only 19-10, 10-7 in the conference, but they took BYU in Provo to 5 sets in a thrilling match earlier this season. So we'll be definitely watching that score. Matt, women's basketball had a rough week since we were last on the air. Back-to-back losses to Georgia, a massive, just crushing 30-point loss to Georgia, a little closer heartbreaker down the stretch to Oklahoma. Up next for the Cougars is the University of New Mexico Classic in Albuquerque. Is anything classic in Albuquerque?
Albuquerque is actually an interesting town. Yeah, it's like, the land of enchantment, you know? I mean, you got to give Albuquerque a shot. Albuquerque.
Albuquerque. Have you been to Roswell, New Mexico?
I think I might have driven through Roswell.
Lots of alien statues and paraphernalia there. But they won't be in Roswell, Matt. They'll be up by the University of New Mexico, thank goodness. Their first game will be against St. Joseph's, and they will play either Tulsa or New Mexico. This is Friday and Saturday are the games coming up.
Isn't UNM in Las Cruces? Or is that New Mexico State? I don't even remember.
I think
anymore.
That's New Mexico State. I'm pretty sure New Mexico, University of New Mexico, is in Albuquerque. Isn't that where Bugs Bunny always wanted to go? I took the wrong left turn or something at Albuquerque. Isn't that what from the Looney Tunes? Pretty sure. Watched a lot of those cartoons.
Yeah, UNM's in Albuquerque.
Yeah, of course it is. I'm always right. Yeah, so Matt, let's talk about a football game against UMass. So for the four of you that watched my halftime show, and literally I think only four people watched the halftime show, and you were one of them, Matt. But it was a good one. By the way, I got roasted a little bit by someone, only my brother-in-law, saying I didn't do Boston Batman at all. I just totally spaced it. I just spaced it. I was so annoyed by that first half, Matt. I lost my edge. I thought it was going to be like, 28-0, and it would just be kind of a joking halftime show. But
I'm going to go back to what I said a week ago. I think not doing Boston Batman there was the right decision. I don't know that the world is ready to see your face when you're doing Boston Batman. I know I'm not.
You won't really see my face. I'd be wearing a mask. I don't know if you know how this Batman thing works.
Don't know that the world's ready to see you wearing that little kid Batman mask either.
It's not a little kid Batman mask. It's a full-grown man Batman mask. What the freak is wrong with you? Do you even know me? Of course I have a Batman mask that fits my face. Come on.
What was I thinking?
Yeah, what were you thinking? So, Matt, let's jump into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Gary Payne on Twitter, and we are responsible, world, for Gary Payne being on Twitter.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, world.
Twitterverse.
Twitterverse. You can thank us later. That's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. Just drinking a tasty beverage there.
I thought I was missing a sound effect or something. Why is there this awkward pause? This is very strange.
So is KJ Hall as good a football name as we've had in a while? Matt, let's put KJ Hall's name up there versus some of the other names that we love, like say Rocky Beagle.
How about Butch Powell?
I'd say KJ Hall's not even top on the team right now.
No.
Butch Powell is higher. I'd say Moroni. I'm going to butcher the last name. Laulo Pututau. as hard as it is to say, that is a pretty cool football name, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm a big fan of KJ Hall, but this is not the category for him.
I still like the name. I think it's a good name. The best part was them running some highlights of his dad's career.
That was pretty
during
cool.
the game. That was pretty cool. So,
but in the name game, look at who he's up against. Some of the guys you listed, you got Squally Canada.
Squally Canada, maybe not even the best name in the backfield.
Yeah, and, so it's just that the field is real tough in that category right now.
Yeah. It is tough. So second part to Gary's question, referring to the UMass game, what do you think Satake said at halftime? Now, he was not very happy going into the locker room in his halftime interview. Matt, what do you think, fly on a wall, what do you think Kalani Sitake said to the team at halftime?
What's wrong with you guys? That's where I would have started. the first half, I mean, it was like the Twilight Zone. It was weird. It was very weird. It was disconcerting to watch as a fan. And I'm sure, as you know, I was frustrated. You were frustrated. Satake was clearly frustrated. I'm sure the players were extremely frustrated with what had happened in the first half. Not at all what anybody expected.
It's a little bit of the danger of these November schedules, right? You have a second game in a row against a team that is clearly not in your league from a talent perspective, right? And we could say another one coming up here, right? You've got this game, and you've just played SUU the week before. How do you think it's just difficult to get up for it? And Cincinnati wasn't particularly good, though at least that was a team that has been good lately on the road. But now you had two easy wins in a row. Do you think there's just kind of a lull thing that happens?
Yeah, I think it's got to be hard to maintain focus, right? Because you've got – I'm not making excuses for anybody, but to your point, you just played the SUU game. There's probably been a lot of discussion among the players, you know, who's going to play for how long. And
right.
Then you're going to do that a second week in a row. Going in, you've got a lot of people out in injuries, you know, in some – you know, had you been playing somebody other than UMass, maybe some of these guys who were out injured, maybe they go. And if you're a player, you know who could play if this were a more important game. And so you're looking around at that. You're like, oh, some people are sitting, and you know, we're going to give the ball a lot to some, you know, people who haven't really seen much action. And I think it does take some of the air out. And so that is difficult to overcome. But on the flip side, mentally, you have to be better prepared for that. And you know, I don't know if this really is something that lands on the coaching staff or the players or who, you know, maybe the collective. You've got to show up ready to play, because really what you want to do in a game like the UMass game is you want to put them away early and then be done.
Yep.
You know, you can't let them. You can't let those guys feel like they're hanging around at halftime, because then what you get is what you got in the second half. You start to blow them out because you should have been blowing them out the whole time. But now, you know, because they came in and UMass felt like, oh, well, we came in here, we punched these guys in the mouth, we've got a shot here, we're going to beat these guys in Provo, and that's what they were saying at halftime. Is, oh yeah, we've got them. And then when you start to pull away, you're extremely frustrated.
Until a punt was blocked and a pick six.
And then that's when the jawing happens and some of the extracurricular and these kinds of things after the play. And that's the stuff you really – that shouldn't be happening in a game like this. But it happens because you let them hang around too long.
Okay, so let's get into something, because I've been harping on this all year, and I'm not going to change my tune. Okay? So this is from Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
At Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. Way too early tweet back. He sent this a couple of days ago.
He sent this question last year. It was really far in advance.
He's pressing. He's like Nostradamus. Hill had a higher...
Nostradamus of the tweet pack. I'm just going to keep interrupting you every time you try and read Sweeney's question.
Oh, my gosh. This is come on, buddy. You know how this works.
I'm building up the anticipation. Isn't that a thing? Isn't that something you do?
No. It's showbiz. Not something we do. We are definitely not showbiz. Hill had a higher yards per carry than a yards per attempt, and the third worst QBR against UMass this year of quarterbacks that have opposed them. And remember that UMass was ranked 111th in the country in pass efficiency defense for 2016. Matt, the offense was terrible. It was terrible.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely terrible. Okay, you averaged, and people say, whoa, the running game was okay. Oh, are we going to give a golden star because you had a decent running game against UMass? Right? And your yards per carry against UMass were only a little bit above 5. Okay? We had a better offensive game against Michigan State, for heaven's sakes, in yards per play.
There's not much exciting going on here.
That game still could have been close if the defense and the special teams hadn't started scoring points. I'm just saying, like, this was a terrible performance by the offense. But let's follow it up with Jared Ullman on Twitter, and I need to get the part one of his question here. Let's find part one of his question. All right. So this is at CBC Kid at Heart on Twitter. That's Jared Ullman. He says, Taysom Hill had over 200 yards of total offense and didn't even play in the fourth quarter. I wanted Mangum originally, but insane BYU fans have made me change my mind. RO has way more problems than just Hill. What do you guys think? Matt, is the problem Hill or is it something else?
I think the problem is a combination of things. I think Hill is not free of responsibility, but he's the easy target for you to pin everything on because he's the quarterback. And I don't think in this instance that's necessarily fair either. I do find it interesting that he doesn't want to put himself in the category of what he sees. There's some crazy BYU fans that are chanting Mangum's name from the stands. And so these people seem a little crazy. So I'm going to choose not to get into that camp. But I think that we texted about this a little bit, and I left some comments in the halftime chat that we didn't get to. I don't think that Detmer is done installing the offense. I think that part of the problem is that the players just aren't there. I don't know that there were the right people in Provo to run the offense that he wants to run. I don't believe that either of the quarterbacks have a complete grasp on what it is that Detmer's trying to do. He does not have the right linemen. He has a decent stable of running backs, but I don't think he's got enough of the right receivers. So I think a lot of it starts there, is that it's going to take some time before Detmer has what he needs in the cupboard in order to run the offense that he's going to run. I believe that we'll get there. I don't think we see that in 2016. We may not see it in 2017. You can break down some of the individual position groups. I mean, offensive line with injuries and things is really struggling.
Before we get there, I want to address your comment, okay? And I said this in the halftime show, but seeing only 4 people watched it, only you and I and Brian Taylor and my brother-in-law actually heard it. Matt, I don't care about that. These are the players he was given. Run an offense with these players that takes in. It took him way too long in the season to do the zone read with Taysom Hill. I know he was iffy or whatever else at the beginning. If we wanted to have a special season this year, we need to win 3 of those first 4 ball games, and everything should have been out there. You had a senior quarterback who's an elite runner, and you hardly used him to run for the first 4 games. I don't care that these aren't his players. So what? It hasn't stopped Harbaugh from coming in and starting his system and winning right away and having good offenses and defenses at Michigan. And I get what you're saying. Harbaugh's maybe an unfair comparison because he's Jim Harbaugh, but
and he's also showing up with different goods on the shelf than what we have in Provo.
Yes, but Michigan's recruiting classes had been pretty good. So yes, I agree. But my point is, I just don't think Detmer to me has lacked imagination. He's lacked a flow to the game in a lot of cases. And the other part is, you know, outside of I'm going to give the ball to Jamal Williams a bunch of times, he has not figured out how to use his receivers. And I get that they're not a super elite, talented group of wide receivers. I get that. There's not one on the team who is probably, you know, 80th percentile and better. Okay. But you've got a bunch of guys that have some talent, and you still haven't been able to get a decent passing game out of it.
Well, but I think part of it is I think there's still communications issues between the receivers and the quarterbacks.
But whose fault is that? It's a coaching problem.
Maybe, but don't you think? I mean, this far into the season, the players bear some responsibility for that?
They do. They do, most certainly. But this whole thing, well, they couldn't grasp his offense. Like, what is he doing? Is he running like a nuclear physics offense? Like, I mean, come on. If the players aren't grasping your offense, then change it. Like, maybe it's too complicated. If Taysom Hill and Tanner can't figure it out, like, I mean, we're not going to have quarterbacks who spend 2 years or 3 years as a backup and figure out the offense that then play. That's not how college football works anymore. You know, you're going to have to play freshmen and sophomores in key positions. And if they can't get it, then you've got the wrong offense.
Well, and to your point, and I don't know, I'm not trying to flip-flop too much here, but to your point, we have a situation at the quarterback position at BYU right now unlike really anything we've seen in a very long time.
Yes.
And this is not going to happen again in the next 10, 15 years.
No.
Where you have two guys like this, both of whom high football IQ, high talent with their respective skill sets, you know, which are a little bit different, but really talented, really smart and athletic guys that have some really, really solid, strong skills. You're not going to have this again.
No. And that's good and bad, right? Because in a lot of times, you know, having two good quarterbacks at the same time is a nice blessing if somebody gets hurt. If they don't get hurt, then it's just kind of lousy because then you've got fans cheering for the backup to come in and such. But man,
it's
not
awkward, right? You do this promo for people to buy bowl game tickets. You got to use both quarterbacks in the promo.
Yeah.
You know, one of them's got a really awkward mustache. Actually, the Tanner's mustache is looking better.
It has grown in. It has grown in.
The first week I was like, it's grown on him. I see what you did there. I hope he keeps it. I hope that the mustache isn't just a November thing. He should keep it.
Not that I'm flip-flopping, but your other points are valid in that the offensive line is not what it should be. They struggle in pass protection. They are at average or maybe a little bit above average at run blocking, okay? But they struggle in pass protection. It's very hard for a quarterback, even a mobile one, to put up good pass numbers when people are jumping into his face before he completes a three-step drop.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind, you know, just sticking here on the offensive line, right? These weren't the guys that were projected to start. These weren't the guys that any of us expected to start at the beginning of the season. And if you go back to some of the things you've talked about, say the zone read and – you know, and some of the plays that they're calling, that is a piece of it.
Yep.
The more complicated you get with these different types of things, the more different things you're asking the offensive line to do. You've got a couple guys that weren't planning on starting quite yet, maybe didn't get reps in spring ball, and in some cases even in August that you would have gotten in for a starter. So you were playing from behind there early, and during those first three or four games, Taysom was a lot more hesitant than he is now. And so if I'm the offensive coordinator, I might not call all of the plays you were talking about either, because I don't know that Taysom was ready to run them.
Maybe not. Maybe not. He may not have been because he did not look.
He looks way more comfortable now than he did in September.
Of course he looks way more comfortable. He's run for all these yards against SUU, Cincinnati, and UMass. Of course he looks more comfortable. These teams are terrible, Matt. They're bad. They're bad, and the offense still doesn't look very good. I mean, UMass's defense is one of the worst in the country, right? This isn't like we're talking about a mediocre team and we played below what we should. This is a terrible team that we played, and the offense really never got it going until, except for Hall and Taysom running the football, but it's, I don't know, man. That game, it's still depressing to me these last 2 weeks. And these should be weeks where you're just going, whatever, right? They should not be weeks where we're even having these discussions.
Yeah, I said it to you and I said it in the comments. I couldn't believe I was yelling at my TV during a game against UMass. I didn't even – usually, I sit up in the TV room with the doors closed and all this watching the game. For the UMass game, I was like, I'm not going to worry about it. We'll just watch it out here and kids running around and we're kind of hanging out. And by the end of the first quarter, I was like, this is not good. I had to change my game plan.
So, Matt, let's switch to something a little bit more interesting than what we've been talking about. Harvey Lange's return to the offensive side of the football. And Kalani Sitake said today, when asked, he said Harvey may play both ways Saturday against Utah State. Matt, what do you think about Harvey Lange's return to running back position?
I think it's awesome. I love that guy. Love that guy.
And once he started, like, you could tell on his first few runs that it was kind of like, he did the quote of somebody asked him, it's like getting on a bike. He's like, yeah, but, the bike I had in high school wasn't quite as fast, as this one is. And he didn't carry the ball that much as a freshman against the at the University of Utah. So Matt, I'll tell you this much. I thought so at the time, and I'll stick by it. I think that Bronco and his staff made a mistake in putting Lange on the defensive side of the ball. He was a special running back in college, in high school. And I think they made a mistake. I think they did. I didn't expect Kalani Sitake's staff to adjust that this year. But I think we can safely say he's not a defensive end. Right?
He's definitely not a defensive end. I think just as big of a mistake moving him to the defensive side of the ball was expecting him to play as a defensive end when you changed the scheme. What you had to do, I understand why they did it. They went and they found the most talented, I don't want to say the most talented, but they had to find the guy who had the highest chance of pulling off that switch among the linebacker
core. And it was him.
And it was him because he's athletic and he's fast.
And he's got the size that they didn't have to maybe put as much on a frame, say if you try to turn Fred Warner into a defensive end, right?
Right. And he's a little bit crazy. Yep. And so so all of those things, it worked, at least in on paper, right? So he was the sensible choice if you're going to pick somebody from that group. But the move to defensive end didn't, we were excited about it at the beginning of the season, but really, looking at it, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I think this is probably where he belongs, but if you've got a healthy Jamal, what do you do?
If you have a healthy Jamal.
And these decisions are all made with a healthy Jamal in your backfield.
Absolutely. But here's the thing, and I said this at the beginning of the year, they did not have enough depth at running back. Running back, you always lose 1 to 2 running backs a year. Now you hope it's not your number one, but running backs get hurt all the time. Ankle sprains, fingers, knees. It just happens because especially if you're going to have a run-heavy offense, which we thought we would have, Francis Bernard's switch to the defense has been successful. He's been a good linebacker, but wouldn't we have...
He looked pretty good, yeah.
Couldn't we have used him this season? I think in some of those games at the beginning of the year when Squally, maybe they weren't totally comfortable with him, I think it would have been good to have a third back to try out. I'm just saying. I think this staff maybe was fine, but I think Harvey Lange could have been Harvey Unga. That was the back he was compared to a lot coming out of high school. and I think he could have been that guy, and we'll never know, but I hope he gets 5 or 6 carries and plays defense on Saturday night. That would be awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
And Matt, my season, my dream has been dashed of seeing Tanner and Taysom on the field at the same time. That is never going to happen, is it?
Nope, never going to happen.
Okay, so Matt, let's preview the Utah State Aggies. My agenda that I sent you is not the Utah State Aggies. That's like several weeks old. I believe that's Cincinnati. But I've got the statistics right here in front of me. According to Football Outsiders, Utah State is the 71st best team in the country, 73rd on offense, and 56th on defense. If you dig into the numbers, Matt, this is a good matchup for BYU, and I'll tell you why. Utah State is much better against the pass than they are against the run. Well, guess what? We're much better running the football than passing. So that's good,
right?
That
seems to work out in our favor.
That seems to work out in our favor. And their defense, their offense, quite frankly, is not very good. So I don't think our defense will have any issues on Saturday night. Matt, we're favored by 19 points. Are you taking the Cougars or the points there?
Am I taking the Cougars or the points?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
So I don't... I'm sticking with my what I've done, what I've said every week.
So you're taking,
except for SUU and UMass, I don't believe they cover the 19 points.
You don't believe BYU covers? I do believe they've covered. Let's do a few over-unders before we get to our final. Over-under, 0.5 carries for Jamal Williams.
Over.
I also agree that it's over. Over-under, 0.5 touchdowns for Harvey Lange. Either side
over.
Of the ball.
Over. I'm not even going to hesitate on that.
I will also go over.
I think if we get down in close, they like to mix it up. You know, they've tried to do Algie Brown in there and stuff. I think if you've been feeding Jamal the ball all the way down the field and you need a fresh pair of legs in there, Harvey's who they're going to go with.
Well, they haven't used Algie since that was so disastrous back at the beginning of the season. Thank goodness. By the way, KJ Hall would be good at the goal line. Size is so overrated. This whole thing that started with like the bus and whatever, unless you've got some guy that's really that big, I'd rather just have the better running back. Anyway, Matt, over under 206.5 yards passing for Taysom Hill.
Under.
I will go under as well. Over under 0.5 offensive plays for Tanner Mangum.
Over.
I will take the over as well. We'll get to that in a minute. Over under, Matt, a 100-yard receiving day for anybody on the Cougars.
Under.
Under as well. Obviously, we both don't think there's going to be a lot of passing yards to be had. So, Matt, what's your prediction for Saturday night against Utah State?
So, I think that, I'm not going to – let's not get crazy and predict that Utah State comes out of this game with a win. That's just silly, right? I think they'll score some points. You know, they've scored against everybody. They got in against USC. They put up 10. They kept it respectable against Boise State. I think they score some points. But I think that they don't really have a chance or a good answer for the running game that we're going to put together, especially now that we've kind of released Harvey Longy here, and I think you get some Jamal Williams back, and I think you see some more Hall. I think you see a little bit of the ball will get spread around a little bit, and hopefully you can get through this game with a healthy Taysom. So. I just don't think they're going to be able to slow down the running game. I think BYU punts not very much in this matchup, but I do think they keep it close enough to not cover that 19-point spread. So I'm thinking we land somewhere in the vicinity of a 35-17 final score.
Yeah, Matt, I hear what you're saying on the points. I think they've scored, though. When they've faced defenses as good as ours or better, they have not moved the ball particularly well. I think this all depends on covering on Jamal Williams and his health. If he is in there, I think they cover the 19. If he is not, I don't think they do, but I also don't think it's particularly close. I think Tanner gets a series or two at the end of this one, and I'm going to call it 31-10 will be the final, assuming Jamal Williams is in there. If he's not, I'll call it like, I don't know, 28-10, maybe 24-14, something like that. So Matt, we obviously don't think anything's going to happen in this game. I think Kalani Sitake will also have them way like super prepared for this game. I don't think they will have a letdown first half like they've had against SUU and even more so against UMass. Don't think that happens.
No, I think that the UMass game is a huge wake-up call in this type of a situation. Luckily, it's against a team that you can come out in the second half and destroy. But you've learned that lesson. I don't believe you repeat that mistake this week.
Absolutely. No, I don't think they do. Plus, there's the whole, you know, in-state rivalry thing that I think will help them for sure. So, Matt, BYU basketball, that game has wrapped up, I believe, yes. Final yep. score 92-62. First half looked was close, and then blew them away in the second half. Let's talk hoops a little bit, Matt. Gary Payne, that's at Fast Break GP again on Twitter, says, "Has LJ filled the floor general void left by Kyle Collinsworth beyond your expectations, Matt? Has LJ Rose filled that void beyond your expectations?
Yes, LJ Rose is the man."
Is he your new favorite player? Do you have a man crush on LJ Rose?
Right now, and we texted about this the other day, right now he is my favorite player on this team.
He is.
I love him.
I love watching him. I think he does just a fantastic job. Tonight he's not going to get triple doubles a ton, but he is going to be their stat filler. Like tonight against St. Louis, it was 5 points, 12 boards, 8 assists. No turnovers. Okay? Now, 1-for-5 shooting, he's just not going to be the guy, but we really don't need him to be the guy. Now, this was a weird game against St. Louis. Mika had 20 and 10, but Kyle Davis, 22 points, a couple steals and a block. St. Louis was just didn't have the size to put up. But the nice thing I like about this particular game is Emery and Hawes were off a combined 6-for-18 shooting, and we still were able to win this game by 30. Emery was off last year, and we were, like, toast, right? You know what I mean? Like, we'd be toast, and we're not this team. And the second part of Gary's question is, how do you feel about the depth of this year's team, Matt?
I'm also kind of surprised. I see more depth here than I had anticipated. You know, you go back to our preview and some of the players that I didn't think we're going to contribute. While my opinion wasn't very popular at the time, is also turning out that it could be wrong.
Totally, though. I mean, some of the players we talked about, like Dastrup, I don't know that he's going to play a massive role on this team.
No, but I think I underestimated Elijah Bryant.
Oh, yes, you definitely. Elijah Bryant's going to be our backup point guard, right?
Yeah.
And so far has done a pretty good job. He didn't against St. Louis. Threw up zeros, but has played pretty well so far.
You know, and then when you start talking about depth, one of the things we haven't seen yet is what it looks like with Kafusi.
No, we haven't. And right now, you know, you've got Dastrup, you've got Childs, who's been he's extremely talented. I just didn't know how much we'd get out of him as a freshman, right? Just hard to know. It's big men as freshmen, you know, you just. Any players are freshmen, not just big men. You know, Ates has played a little bit. He looked good tonight against St. Louis, 12-5. You know, you put Kafusi in there as a defensive stopper. And the great thing about Kafusi is we don't have to pretend that he's a post-up threat anymore, right? You don't have to feed him the ball 3 or 4 times a game just because we didn't know what else to do on offense, right?
Right.
Mika and Davis will get all of those looks. And if they're not in, Childs gets them, right? You know, and the other good point is if Mika does get into foul trouble, he had a little bit tonight against St. Louis, then you've got guys to step in, you know, and that The one of the biggest problems the last couple of years was if one big guy got in foul trouble, you were hosed.
Cooked.
And that's certainly a big deal. I don't know, Matt, if you saw the TJ Hawes behind the back drive to the hoop, two defenders close, and then he did behind his head to Childs for the dunk.
It's not bad. I mean, it's okay, I guess.
It was phenomenal. That kid is, he's going to be better than I thought. And I thought he was going to be pretty good, but you know, he had an off game shooting the ball tonight against St. Louis and has not equaled that opening night against Princeton since. But Matt, is Mika, I mean, this is Mika's team. We said this last week. Anything changed in your mind? This is Eric Mika's team, right?
Yeah, it is.
Everybody else, even with as much as you love LJ Rose, I mean, this is Mika's team, and it's going to go as far as he carries them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you know, with a lot of help from Nick Emery. Do we need a better name than the Lone Peak 3 for those three guys? Or is that it? Is that the name?
It seems kind of lame.
I don't know.
Yeah, but that's, it's
the apropos. Big three.
The big use of the big three. Listen, I've got a whole issue with that. So you're opening a whole can of worms.
Uh-oh. Can of worms opened.
And we started throwing out the phrase the big three.
Can of worms opened, folks.
There was a team that had the big three once upon a time.
Miami Heat. Chris Bosh.
It was not the Miami Heat.
Okay.
All right? It was the Boston Celtics. Had the big three. Now, trying to pin this moniker on all these other teams by grabbing, well, they've got these three guys or these three guys, I think it is lame.
Okay, tell us how you really feel.
You gotta be, it doesn't, not every good team has to have the big three. It's just lame. That was a name for that group of guys. I'm not even a big Celtics fan, so I don't know why this bothers me so much. But it really bugs me because oh my gosh, when it was the Heat, it drove me up the wall.
All right, I've got a couple of suggestions for their nickname. Are you ready?
Okay, just don't give me the big three.
I have taken that out of my suggestions. We don't need that rant twice. All right, the Elders Quorum.
Oh boy, this is getting worse. Okay, I'm starting to feel better about the big three now.
I won't even tell you the rest of them. They're all terrible.
Are they all mission? Are some of them mission related? Like, yeah. Is there one that's like the district meeting?
Yeah. The zone leaders.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I haven't come up with a good name. Though I did say the Blue Brethren on Facebook, on Twitter tonight, were asking about things like, you know, where was it? I've got to find this. It was pretty funny. Davis is the Elders Quorum president. Hawes is the ward clerk. Frampton is the Teachers Quorum president. That was my favorite. Help me with the rest. And somebody responded and said, Mika, the Deacon Quorum's president. That's a pretty big Deacon's Quorum president, dude. So I don't think that's it.
I've not seen a deacon that size.
Dastrup.
We've got a teacher in my ward right now that's not quite that size, but he's not 6'10", but he's pretty big.
Dastrup nursery worker. I thought that one was pretty good.
Yeah, Dastrup, I would do his hair differently. I'll just say that. I know it's cool. I'm just an old man.
Do you see any other people on the team wearing it that way?
I should probably be careful because it's pretty close to a haircut I may or may not have had as a young man.
It's
so.
Not only pretty close, it's almost identical. If I could find the picture. If I find the picture, it's going up on our Twitter feed at this point after you made fun of Dastrup for a haircut you once had.
When I had it, though, nobody else had it. It was even worse.
What are you talking about? Nobody has it now. Dastrup has it. I haven't seen it on anybody else. Just looks like a bad toupee was pasted on top of his bald head. It's a terrible haircut.
Pretty much.
But it's fine.
Right, what else we got? Who else we have on this team?
I don't know. Where do you put, like, Childs? Somebody put out executive secretary.
Maybe, but didn't we put TJ? What was TJ Haas? Oh, he was the ward clerk.
TJ Haas was the ward clerk. That's totally perfect, isn't it? Isn't it perfect?
It really is.
And Frampton is the teacher's quorum president. Hats off to the Blue Brethren. That's a pretty good one. I mean, he does look young. And when they say he's going on a mission, like, no duh, he's going on a mission. The guy's.
Look at him. Yeah, that picture right there off the website. If they don't put that on the plaque in his ward when he leaves.
So Matt, let's close out with something here.
Oh, because this picture was probably taken post mission.
Frampton?
Zach Frampton says right here, served a mission in Chile.
Yeah, he just got back. That's why I'm joking. He did. He looks like he's going on a mission.
They took this picture at the airport. Right here. He's probably a really good guy.
No, he probably is. But he doesn't. If this was you, I would make fun of you, right? Like, this isn't mean spirited. This is all done in love. Well, I don't know if it's done in love, but
He does look kind of young. This is a fun game, though. This is a fun game. I'm going to have to look this up on Twitter. This is a fun game.
Yeah, it's a fun game for sure. So, Matt, let me get you on one more thing before we go. And we started with the NFL. We're going to close with the NFL. Okay? A lot has been made of recently of some major gaffes by NFL officials in games. And there's some that are happening right now as we speak in the Monday Night Football game. Major gaffes. And that's been a running theme the last couple of years. And I think the NFL is down in ratings. I think it's partially due to people being frustrated with the officiating. Matt, do you think they need to go to full-time officials?
Yes.
Is there any good reason for them not, for a business that's worth billions of dollars, to not have officials who their only job is to ref football games?
I can't think of a good reason.
Like, this only exists because they couldn't afford to pay officials back in the day, and you had to be somebody that made money elsewhere.
But, some of these guys like Hockley, I mean, they make real money elsewhere.
That's fine. Don't bring Hockley. Get somebody else. It's not like Hockley's like the reffing god. Just go find people, pay them a lot of money, and let them dedicate themselves
to it as their
umpires
profession.
I get it. Umpires coach. Umpires ump, all the time, right? So they don't have
162 games a year plus spring training.
But they don't do 162 games. They end up doing like 130. But your point is well taken. My point is that football is physically more difficult. It is harder to officiate than baseball. I think basketball might be on par, maybe not quite as hard, but basketball is also very hard because of the speed.
Physically, it's demanding, the up and down the court.
Yes, it's physically demanding, and there's a lot of judgment calls and split-second stuff like there is in football. In football, I would just want – I get in college, they probably can't afford to do that. The NFL, there is no good reason, not a single good reason, to not have full-time officials. Now, would it solve all these problems? I don't know. You still have to train them, right? Right?
Yep.
So I don't know if it would solve all these problems. It does seem silly. Matt, why do you think the NFL is down? Is it concussions? Is it off the field stuff? Is it Netflix? I mean, what's bringing down the NFL?
Is it Netflix? It's Deflategate.
It's Deflategate. Actually.
So no, seriously, though, I'm not going to blame it all on Deflategate, but all of the, in some of the cases, some of the off-the-field stuff and some of the things that Goodell's gotten wrong off the field and some of those things have been real things that needed to be addressed.
Yes.
You got players doing things that are illegal, players involved in domestic violence cases. Those types of things need to be addressed. And I think in terms of a commissioner of the NFL, you have to do everything you can to get that stuff out. You got to get that out, right? You've got to address those things. You got to take care of it. But at the same time, there's a lot of these – there's a couple. And Deflategate's the perfect example because it really took on a life of its own. It's a fake controversy.
Absolutely fake.
And it's not interesting. You know, and people don't, you know, people, that's not what people watch football for. You know, the other thing is you're flagging these guys. You know, there's a, you know, a guy gets into the end zone and he dances in a way that resembles twerking. So they flag him and fine him. It's like, what is that? Who's calling Goodell's office on a Monday and complaining about a guy dancing in the end zone? What are we trying to save or protect?
Well, I don't understand.
By taking that out, right? I don't understand it. So I think you're making the game less. It's like you got this. You have this thing. It's this wonderful product. And he's squeezing it in places where you don't need to do anything, and it's changing the product for the fans.
I'll tell you what I think the other part is, Matt. Thursday, Saturday, Monday, it's too much. It's lowered the quality of the product.
Yes,
because of these short weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too much. Like a lot of business people make this mistake, especially in consumer products. Well, if people like it, they'd like more of it. Not always. Not always.
Well, and you owned a day of the week.
You owned it. Yes.
And you're diluting that power by spreading out over the, you know, 2 or 3 days in either direction.
Well, and in these primetime games on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday nights, okay, they want marquee matchups, which means during your own day of the week, often the best games aren't there. Often two of the, say, five best matchups of the week are not happening during the day on Sunday, right? And I get it, Sunday night is a big deal, and it's been a big deal. But, man, I'll tell you, I think you're right, though. I think Goodell's running this thing into the ground because he has no idea what he's doing. Absolutely none.
And do you know what else I think would change it? They need to find a better way to make all of the games available.
Then only let DirecTV people see it?
Yep.
All the time? Of course they do.
That model, I think that really hurts you.
It's a short-term financial gain for a long-term. And you know what else killed them? And I love it, but it shouldn't exist. The Red Zone channel.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically said, we're only going to show you the interesting parts of games, and you've shortened people's attention spans. If it's not a touchdown, what's the point? But football is much more is very interesting sometimes when there's no touchdowns being scored. Anywho, well, that's our NFL rant. We started with the NFL, we ended with the NFL, and we made fun of Goodell multiple times. I'd call that success.
What a dork. There's one more.
He is a dork. He's just a dork. You know what I mean? Like, if he became the CEO of your company, you'd start looking for a job.
Wouldn't you? To interact with him at all. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Even if I didn't have to interact with him, I just feel like my job's going to go away. Because this idiot doesn't know what he's doing. So Matt,
I'd make sure that the PSI in all the footballs was right.
That's right. Sure. You better believe it is. You make sure your pillow's fluffed, buddy. According to regulations. So Matt, next week we will be back on our regularly scheduled Tuesday evening. We'll have, of course, be talking about Utah State. We'll have more basketball games to talk about, more basketball games to preview, and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we may have some clarity, Matt, on who we play in the bowl game. Maybe not decided by then. Right now it's being projected. I'm thinking it's San Diego State unless, you know, they're going to be in Las Vegas if they win it, or they're going to be against us in San Diego, right? The Poinsettia Bowl can't pass up on us versus San Diego State.
No, and you love it.
Oh,
you
I love it. Though Air Force would be cool, too. I'd be cool with, you know, we've got a historical rivalry with Air Force. I've always enjoyed that one. But no, I want San Diego State, and I want to beat the living snot out of them. Oh, yeah! Let's do it!
Your hate for San Diego State is so fun.
It is so fun. We're going to do something crazy in December, Matt. We're going to have a bowl preview show, and then after the bowl, have a bowl show. It'll be two podcasts in the same freaking week.
That's going to be crazy. That's craziness. That's crazy talk.
Preview the bowl. And then, of course, upcoming later in December, will be our bowl, previewing every bowl in existence, will also be coming up in December. It's one of our favorite things to do. Puts people to sleep. Cures insomnia.
It is. It's an annual tradition.
It's an annual tradition, and it's like eating turkey. Nobody likes it, but you still do it anyway.
That's right. It's going to put you to sleep, and then when you wake up, you'll watch some football.
That's right.
It's basically the same thing as eating
turkey. It's exactly the same thing as eating turkey. Do you like turkey? I don't like turkey.
I like turkey.
I feel like turkey's just something I eat. I eat less and less of it every year because I want to eat more pie. I'm just saying, I just eat less and less every year. Anyway, well, thank you guys for downloading and listening. If you download us on iTunes, go give us a review. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, 4 or 5 stars is preferred. Less than that, and just stop listening then. I'm just kidding. You know, you can talk to us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Snail mail, or email as we like to call it, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. That's one word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!